Welcome to the GBC Big Three podcast, a weekly podcast where we sit down and unpack three big questions raised from our Sunday sermon. I'm your host, Matt Willis, and joining me as co-host for the Big Three this week is Jodine Watling. Now, Jodine, I've got to share with the world, you finally have returned to GBC. You've been working from home all this time, and I've been like pulling a Bridget Jones in the corner, singing All by Myself. And now you finally come back to the office. How does it feel returning to a degree of normalcy?
Yeah, I was actually, I think we talked about it in a meeting last night. It was enjoyable being home. Like, it was a nice sort of, I guess, gear shift. Obviously, this situation made that necessary. But then, you know, several weeks in, it was like being in a glass case of emotions, swimming in my own soup way too long. And it's like, I think I need to see some people while I'm working. So it has been good being back. You know, you really kind of, I guess this season is one of appreciation. You appreciate a lot of the little things that are just you normally would take for granted. So even something like that. I mean, I always appreciated my work colleagues, Matt Willis.
I needed the world to hear that.
Yeah.
But and there's the reason for the question.
I'm just fishing, really.
There you have it. Then.
I feel ya. I mean, I had my own glass case of emotion. I worked here because I didn't have the Wi-Fi connection or the space at home to work from home. But I was just in this giant church by myself roaming the halls. Like, so it's just good to have you home. It's good to have you back.
Thanks.
Bless your heart. And again, joining us after preaching on Sunday is Mark Rader. Now, Mark, I'm giving a bit of a Big Three spoiler. You wrapped up your message on Sunday with a 2.5 application. And actually, our three questions this week are solely around that application. So I thought it would be helpful for those who didn't get a chance to log in on Sunday, haven't had a chance to jump on YouTube and watch the sermon. Could you give us a brief, operative word, brief synopsis of your message up to the point of the applications?
It's always dangerous asking a preacher to give a brief summary.
That's why I've said brief. This is the fourth time I've said brief.
That's right.
Just make it brief.
I think that essentially the section that we were looking at, the reading was in chapter 10, but the section started in chapter 9, it's the end of the main section of Hebrews, where the author has been talking about the different order of Jesus's priesthood. He's talked about the promises and the covenant, and this last section was exclusively around Jesus's ministry. And the one piece that he pulls out of that is wrapped around the perfect forgiveness in comparison to the forgiveness of the Old Testament. So the example that I used was, you know, if you print off a document and you correct it by hand, but then press print again without changing the master, you're just going to reiterate the same mistakes. And that's essentially what the Old Testament was about, just kind of the repetition of, because no one had access to the original document. And Jesus makes that significant change. And that perfect forgiveness then kind of opens access to kind of to chum it with God, as I said, chumming it with God and Jesus and the Holy Spirit. It enables a relationship of freedom and of love and of joy. And that perfect forgiveness is kind of what leads into the, you know, in particular, the aspects of confession, which is what we're talking about. Is that brief enough?
You were starting to get there, but I'll allow it. You just made it in. Well, as you said, this week, Mark spoke on perfect forgiveness as part of our series in the book of Hebrews titled Anchor. And you can listen to that message again through our regular GBC Sermons podcast. But today, as always, we're going to unpack three big questions submitted through Slido during our Sunday services. So guys, let's get into the big three. Now, Rader, as I said, you kind of wrapped up your message with a 2.5-point application for us all, these practical things for us to take out into our week as we kind of live in this perfect forgiveness. And the first of that was the spiritual practice of confession, bringing that into our day-to-day and making it a regular part of how we live out our relationship with Jesus. And it's interesting that you actually raise this, because just last Friday as a youth ministry, we had a panel discussion around forgiveness and the topic of confession came up. And for a lot of our youth and our even youth leaders, we talked about the difficulties and the barriers that come with confession. You know, there's shame and there's guilt around sin. There's fear of rejection, from God, mm-hmm. From peers, and even from the church. Yep. And so it's really created this hesitancy and silence around confession and an apprehension to actually confess. Mm-hmm. Yep. Despite the fact that for everyone involved in that conversation, we could acknowledge that confession was an important part of the redemption process, that, you know, we first have to start with that repentance, mm-hmm. of our sins, but we acknowledge that it can be hard. And that is ultimately where our first question has landed. So how do I, as a follower of Jesus, make confession a regular part of my spiritual practice without being overwhelmed by the guilt and the shame of my sin?
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, I think there's a couple of perspectives in that.
Mm.
Because I think that the guilt and the shame, the regret, that stuff's always going to sit with us, right? Because that's part of the acknowledgement process. If there wasn't any guilt, if there wasn't any shame, if there wasn't any regret, if there wasn't any kind of tingling of our conscience, then we wouldn't be aware of where our lives were out of alignment, right?
Yeah.
And so we need to recognize that those feelings are part of our coming to grips with what we've done or what we haven't done or whatever the case might be. Mm. And to some degree, we have to manage those, right? Because they're internal to us. They're kind of our response. I think the piece that changes it for us is that so often fear comes of what the other person is going to think or say, particularly the person that we've hurt or we've wronged. And so when we think about God, I think the perfect forgiveness means, as I was talking about in the message, that there's no fear. Like, there is no more wrath to be poured out because that's all been poured out on Jesus. Mm. And so he has died once for all, which is such a powerful theological statement. You know, it means that the sins that I have committed have been forgiven. Mm. And we kind of go, yep, fair enough. But the sins that I will go on to commit in my life have also been forgiven. So Jesus isn't waiting for me to sin to kind of go, okay, let me mop that up. He is like permanently dealt with it all. And so all the wrath for all that I have done wrong and will do wrong and am currently contemplating to do wrong, you know, like all that kind of stuff, past, present, and future, has been taken care of. And so while I may still feel ashamed at what I've done, while I still may feel guilty, while I still may have some regrets, that's shall I say, on me.
Mm.
God the Father waits for us to come to him because he's no longer, I'm not going to say capable of wrath, but like the forgiveness, it's done.
Yeah.
And if we knew that we were not going to get in trouble, we'd be much more likely to confess.
Mm.
Right? Like, you remember you being a little kid and, you know, something happens and you're like, you know, who did this? And you're like, I know it was me, but this is going
to
end badly.
Never happened to me.
Never happened to you.
Never
happened to me either. But maybe Joe's is ever happened. No. we've all heard of somebody for whom that might be true. But if we knew that there was not going to be any trouble, like if we weren't going to get in trouble, geez, that makes it a little bit easier to confess. I still might be a little bit ashamed of what I've done, which makes that hard. But I think it's that piece that makes it so important. So in terms of the how, then, I mean, I think that we have to get into the pattern of just simply making sure that we confess regularly.
Yeah.
Right. You know, I think one of the advantages of confession as well is just it helps us become more aware and heightens our conscience. Right?
Yeah.
Our sensitivity of our conscience of what we're doing that's not in alignment with what God's on about. So, like, I think regular confession, and I think as well to be able to say, you know, Lord, I'm pretty ashamed.
Yeah.
Like, I'm feeling pretty guilty. I can't believe I fell down in the place where I always fall down again. You know, whatever it is that, you know, I can't believe that I let that opportunity go, or I can't believe I said what I just said, or like, whatever it is, you know, and so I think acknowledging that as well, which then allows us, as you know, the second kind of point of the application, it allows us to ask for the resources we need.
Yeah.
You know, help me deal with this. Help me recognize that I have been forgiven. And that needs to be part of our practice, you know, to say, you know, yeah, okay, thank you for your forgiveness. Mm. And perhaps even starting with that, you know, in our prayer, you know, I want to thank you that I've been forgiven. I want to acknowledge that I stand before you, not condemned, not under wrath, not on your wrong side, somehow out of the picture, and I have to kind of grovel my way back in. I want to acknowledge I've been forgiven. Thank you. But here's where my life hasn't lined up with that. And even just the kind of the order of our prayer might be a really helpful thing to do.
Yeah, and I think what's interesting about that, what that kind of draws light on for me, is that sometimes, and I think we've talked about this before, there are so many like Christian beliefs that we have about who Jesus is and what he has done that we hear so often that it kind of, it almost becomes cliche. And, you know, the whole, your sins are forgiven. I think for many people, and we definitely heard this in the conversation that we had as a youth group on Friday, it's become cliche and people are struggling to actually feel grounded in that truth. And I think, you know, that's part of the process, because then if you're not grounded in the truth and really feel consumed and free from that perfect forgiveness, then you do start to bring in that baggage of, oh gosh, like I am asking for forgiveness for the same thing another time, and surely God's over it by now. We project the way human relationships work onto God. And it's almost because we haven't fully allowed ourselves to be transformed and to be impacted by what that perfect forgiveness.
And we need to realize just how dangerous it is to put human reactions on God. Because, like, imagine if God got cynical the way we get cynical. You know, like if someone disappoints me multiple times, we might still be friends. I'm not going to trust you in anything. When you promise me to do, you promise to do something, I'm going to be like, internally at the very least, yeah, right.
Yeah.
Like, can you imagine how devastating it would be if we came to the Father and said, oh, listen, I'm really sorry, I won't do it again. He's like, yeah, right. Like, holy. Like, and that's, I mean, and just stating it, I think, makes it clear that that's not
who he is.
That's not how God responds. Mm. He's always soft-hearted to us, which I think is remarkable.
Jadine, what are your thoughts on all of this? It's a big question.
Yeah, I can, I guess, really identify with this question, because I think often when you do come to confession, because it is a vulnerable thing, you're exposing yourself at a place where there's been a rupture relationally, whether that's with you and another person or you and God or something. There's been a rupture. And how to go through that process of repair is slightly painful. I think one of the things that comes to mind is that often shame and guilt, whilst yes, they often are part of the, I guess, equation of forgiveness, it's one of the precursors too, but often we can have habitual patterns of shame. And if it's showing up in this space, my guess, and not condemnation, but guess, would be that it's showing up in other places of your life. And that's a hard thing to dismantle, because it's an emotional habitual pattern that something happens and you will just grab that thing off the shelf and put on that shame and start to fundamentally blame yourself. I'm not worthy, I'm not right. It could, you know, any situation, it could be completely someone else's fault, but because we're so used to that well-worn path of blaming ourselves, that's our default position to gain some sense of control, but it's just a really a poor attempt at that. So I think my thought is to maybe observe where shame is showing up in your life, because often it's not just around confession. It'll be the way you relate to people when you're doing your job, when you're going about your life, when you're trying to get dressed in the morning. It'll show up everywhere. And I think if you can observe that without judgment and start to see it as, I guess, an emotional response we're having, we can then start to pull the thread and seeing what's driving that. What's driving that? And I think once we get down to sort of some of those root causes, and there's a lot of detours along the way, you can actually start to bring the intersection of what God's saying here of that true forgiveness is because you are worthy. And that it's done and finished.
I think that there's also, it's also worth just reflecting really briefly on the fact that confession has been a part of like Christian spiritual practice, in terms of not confession just to God, but confession to one another. You know, like in the Roman Catholic Church, it's still one of their kind of a central feature of their spirituality. And even some of the early reformers kind of felt that there was enough validity in confessing to one another. And I think that that's also really valuable, because it's the affirmation that we stand together forgiven. And so I want to kind of confess to you, I want to share with you where my life is not in alignment. And to some degree, part of the power of that is then to be able for you to say to me, Mark, your sins have been forgiven. Not because you're able to forgive them, but because you're declaring what's true over my life. And I think, you know, how we do that becomes, you know, really complicated. There's, you know, power dynamics if it's, you know, clergy and laity. But, you know, finding people that you can say, listen, can you hold me accountable on this aspect of my life? And then enable me to say, yeah, I haven't been as generous in my thought to my boss as I, you know, as I want to be, or I haven't been as kind, you know, to those that my colleagues, whatever it is, like something that's relatively small that doesn't have a huge degree of shame or kind of consequence in that sense, but where we learn the practice of saying, yeah, no, I haven't, this is where my life hasn't lined up.
Yeah.
And to have someone be able to say, yeah, you're forgiven. You know, I think there's power in that too.
Yeah.
I think one of the ironic things is that the antidote for shame is actually speaking it out. You get that thing out of the darkness into the light with safe people that you can trust. That extinguishes shame and takes to somewhere completely different and often a really fruitful, wonderful place. So it's just kind of ironic that the thing for shame is confession.
Absolutely. And it's interesting because this topic has been coming up for me quite a lot lately. I've been reading this book by David Kinnaman called Faith for Exiles, and he himself speaks about, he ultimately calls us back into a confessional community. He's like, if we're going to do church the way church was designed, of intimacy, raw vulnerability with one another as followers of Jesus, we have to return to that confessional community, which is a big challenge. It was clearly a great application. Well, let's move on to question two. Now, Rita, your second point in your 2.5-point application was around this this call to, I guess, ask for the resources that we need to persevere, to persevere in our relationship with Christ, to persevere in this life of faith, in this journey of faith. And it triggered for me something that we've talked about quite a lot, which is, you know, taking that personal audit of our lives and kind of being on purpose, being intentional about what it is that we as individuals, as followers of Jesus, are kind of dealing with at this point in time, and then, I guess, determining, well, what do I need? What am I asking of God to help me through this season? But that can be, you know, that kind of self-awareness and that kind of insight is difficult. It's it's not something that we're born with. It's something that you learn and over time you develop. And so I'm sure that for a lot of people, both listening to your message and maybe even listening today, you know, they kind of go, yeah, that's a great idea. But where's the starting point? Like, what resources can I even ask of God that would be helpful for me in this season of persevering? Yeah. And that is question two today. When it comes to perseverance, what are the resources that we need or that we can ask of God in order to stay connected with Jesus?
Well, yeah, I think, you know, we can ask for anything. So that's, you know, that's the big answer, but, you know,
it's both helpful and a hindrance.
And not helpful at all. That's right. It's like, So, and I think, you know, you talked about self-awareness, and I think that that's actually a really critical piece. And I find, you know, it's interesting, just as a senior staff, we had a conversation yesterday and we ended up talking about how do we find the why for something? And I think we have to often ask, why is something happening in our lives? Or, you know, what do I most need? And then asking, so why do I need that so badly? And just kind of doing a little bit of extra analysis of what it is that we truly need. I didn't mention this in the message, but I did think a little bit about the Wizard of Oz. You know,
as you do.
Well, just in the whole sense, like, you know, I need courage.
Yeah.
You know, and you think about the process of that, you know, like, so I find that whenever something happens, I'm scared. I'm immediately scared. And that's the thing that, of course, we experience. But to then stop and go, so what do I need? Like, at one level, you could say, you know, I need things to stop jumping out and scaring me.
Yeah.
But that's not actually going to solve the problem because there's something deeper going on. And so even just that kind of, I need courage.
Yeah.
Like, that kind of bottom line, you know, and so I found in my life, you know, when I think about the the things that I need most. Like I'd say courage would be one of them. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes that I don't do what I know I need to do because I lack the courage to do it, or I find ways to kind of fudge the action, or whatever it might be. And so, like, for me, like, what's become quite clear is that it's not just about, greater resolve. I actually need courage in order to persevere. And so just kind of being asking those questions, what do I really, really need? And I don't know exactly how you go about doing that, whether it's, through talking with people and trying to figure that out, whether it's having a better understanding and a greater willingness, I suppose, to actually look at your sin, to kind of put it all on the table and kind of go, so what's the common denominator here?
Yeah.
Is it just that I'm sinful? Like I'm just totally depraved and that's all there is to it? Or is there actually more going on here? Because, I think we've all experienced this. There are some sins that are kind of more us and some that are less us. Like there are some things that people will talk about struggling with that I kind of go, that's not my struggle.
Yeah.
That's not my struggle. And, I know you're never supposed to say, that could never happen to me. But there are a bunch of kind of things that I look at and I kind of go, that is really unlikely.
Yeah.
But I could also tell you where I am far more likely to fall.
Mm.
Like I can point that stuff out. So actually having a bit of a look at your life and going, okay, let's see, what are the trend lines here?
Yeah.
Oh, look, there's a whole group of sins that fall into this.
Yeah.
Where what I really need is patience.
Mm.
That's what I really, really need, or whatever it might be. So I think some of those kind of, and you can only really, talk about shame again. You can only really look at your sin and study it in detail if you know you're forgiven, right?
Yeah.
Otherwise, you don't want to bring it into the light.
I'm not putting that on the table.
Yeah, you don't want to kind of look at it and kind of go, oh, look at that. There's some really interesting trends of my wickedness and evil. You can only really do that if I've been forgiven and I can actually afford to kind of put these all out and kind of ask the question, what's going on here?
Mm.
Like, why do I keep falling in these particular areas? Yeah. Why is this an ongoing struggle? Why hasn't this sin ever kind of really changed in my life?
Yeah.
I think I've occasionally talked about, I think there are sins of wax and there are sins of steel in our lives. And the sins of wax are things that we kind of go, oh, wow, that's no good. And we turn to the Lord and we say, Lord, thank you for forgiveness. Would you help me overcome it? Boom, it's gone. Melted out of our lives.
Mm.
And then there's those sins of steel in our hearts. And the only way that's going to melt out of our lives is if we allow the blowtorch of the Holy Spirit to stay on it, by confessing it and saying, I'm forgiven, but here it is, and allowing that to get. What's the sin of steel in your heart?
Mm.
And then, think about that. What's going on there?
You know?
I think that those are kind of, they might be helpful ways for people to kind of engage with that a bit.
Awesome. Mm. Jodes, you'll throw ins on this?
Yeah, I guess the thing I always come back to and just increasingly realize in my own life is just that need for a village to have your people around you. They say it takes a village to raise you, but I feel like it takes a whole village to keep the adult sane for the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm.
So always making sure you have a village, and that changes from season to season. As you move through different areas of your life, sometimes you might need someone who's older ahead in the game of life of you to talk you or help you through things. If you're doing parenting or in studying, stuff like that. It's just helpful to have people that are in different seasons and stages of life that really help you go through it. So I just cannot get past the village. And I think it also takes a growth mindset to be a whole life learner, as Mark was kind of alluding to. Because if you're going to audit your sin, so to speak, you're going to have a really growth mindset of like, okay, I want to change this. I don't want to just look at it. Most of the time, you wouldn't look at it. You'd just avoid it.
Yeah.
You're just on the phone scrolling, doing anything to get away from it. So I think having a growth mindset going, I want to mature. I want to live a life that's whole and holy. You need that attitude of wanting to grow and change beyond your current circumstances and to learn and go through that uncomfortability and vulnerability to move forward.
Yeah, I love that. And I love that piece about, it does take a village, and obviously our village is the church. And I think it's interesting that both talking about confession and then talking about like perseverance, like there's a need to have people rally around you. And I think it's because this is hard work. Like this can hurt at times. It can reveal parts of yourself that you're not quite ready to acknowledge. It means being vulnerable. And so you need to be in a space where you feel safe, where you feel like the people around you, that you can trust them, that they're not going to, you know, they're not going to fulfill your worst nightmare of kind of turning their back on you because of what they see. And so, again, I'm just reminded that as a church, we're called to do this together and to actually be vulnerable with one another and real with one another. I think, you know, there are times where, I can look around and go, are we doing this? I'm constantly coming back to that whole, you got to wear your Sunday best. Now, you guys have seen me at church. I don't necessarily wear my Sunday best. But, you know, this idea that you need to put your best foot forward to go to church, I think it's... I'm not sure if that's...
No. And I think, you know, like it does take a village, but I think we also need to be aware. We tend to think of, you know, kind of the one relationship, like church or life group.
And,
you know, confession or a sin audit, that's the work of one or two close trusted friends. And I think we need to just kind of put that out there.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not sure there's any value in carrying, in kind of airing our dirty laundry in a large group, and even a life group can be too large context. But is there anyone that you can have those conversations with? And I think that becomes a pretty, I mean, kind of a follow-on for that, but we're kind of steering, we're starting to move into a fourth question.
That's all right. On that, let's move to question three.
Helping you with the segue.
Well, your final piece of the application, your half a point rater, was this, was around the idea of, I guess, just sitting and allowing ourselves to experience the joy that comes from, I guess, acknowledging where we end up as a result of this perfect forgiveness, the result of it is that we find ourselves having access to God, having this deep-rooted, intimate relationship with our living God. Like, who would have thunk it that this would be where it all ends up? And I mean, like, obviously God thought it, and that was why it was his plan. But, you know, just taking that moment of kind of going, this is where I am. This is where it, you know, the perfect forgiveness that comes from Jesus has landed. And just, I guess, living in that joy. But I guess, you know, what came through in some of the questions is that people find themselves in a tension where, you know, both personally in our own journeys of faith, you know, there are moments where there's not a lot of joy. You know, faith isn't the easy option. It's the fulfilling option, but it's not always easy. And there are struggles and challenges that really can kind of overwhelm us. But then also we look out at our world and, you know, 2020, what a year to kind of go, hey, there is hurt out there. There is hardships. There are challenges. And so how do we be joy in that space? And so there are times where it's like, actually, it's really hard to sit in that joy and to be reminded of that joy. And that is question number three, how we're going to wrap up today's big three. How do I live in and share the joy of God in amongst hardship and pain? And I think I'm going to caveat this question. I think there are actually two questions in that, and I've kind of already touched on it. How do I, as an individual, when I experience hurt and pain, remain in the joy of God? But then also, how do I, as a follower of Jesus, in a world that experiences hurt and pain, share the joy of God to that world?
Yeah.
Pick one, do both.
Yeah, sure.
Choose your own adventure.
Well, I should probably just clarify for people who are listening and haven't heard the message why this is a 2.5 point.
Yeah.
And it was that the first point of application was to confess, the second was to ask for the resources, and the second one, and the kind of third one or the half one, was to ask then for an experience of joy. So it was kind of the part of the asking.
Yeah.
Kind of, part B. Is that that's kind of why I went 2.5. I probably could have done A and B, but anyway, went with the half.
The beauty of hindsight.
Yeah, that's right. The beauty of hindsight. I should also say that it was Jodes's idea to use the Stephen Bradbury illustration as joy at the unexpected windfall. So I should probably just, you know,
a beautiful team effort here.
credit given where credit's due. I think there's a couple things I'd say about that joy and in relationship to hardship. I think one I think I'd been fairly influenced by C.S. Lewis's definition of joy, that you can't manufacture it. Mm. It just occurs. Mm. And I think that's kind of part of the beauty of joy. When there's a truly joyful moment, you just can't manufacture it.
Yeah.
And there's something beautiful about that. And so I think that's part of the reason why we need to ask. Mm. You ask that we might see a sense of why this is just so, in the best sense of the word, absurd, that we're in the presence of God. So there's that component of it, which I think is important. And I think that, you know, one of the passages that was used in our service in the time of prayer was from Nehemiah, where it talks about the joy of the Lord is your strength. Mm. And that phrase, I think it's interesting that Nehemiah exhorts them to find joy in the Lord and to say, and says that the joy of the Lord is their strength while they are confessing their sins. Mm. And so I think there's something really interesting about the connection between confession and joy, that sense of release and relief and freedom that comes from kind of getting something off your chest to some degree. But I think, therefore, when we're talking about hardship and difficulty, I think, you know, joy doesn't often come. We don't often experience joy in the midst of hardship. Mm. We can. There can be flashes of joy in the most absurd and dark times, really. I think the challenge for us is to avoid being trite and superficial.
Yeah.
You know, we've all met people who, they just always have a positive outlook on stuff. Mm. You know, you know, your whole world's just collapsed. How are you? Oh, I'm fine. I've got lots to be thankful for. Mm. And there's a part of us just kind of goes, that is just, what are you? Mm. Like, that doesn't seem to be authentic. Yeah. So how do we authentically say, I'm okay? Mm. You know, and I reckon that becomes the balance, because we don't want to pretend that lousy situations aren't lousy. Mm. And I think there's something about the ability to say, this is not a great situation, but I believe that I serve and am in a relationship with a God who will see me through this and who has plans and purposes that will somehow incorporate even this mess into his plans to renew all things. And while I may not see that day, and while the circumstances of my situation may not necessarily improve, I'm going to place my trust in him. And so there's a centeredness to our lives. And I think it's often that centeredness, that that position of saying, you know, it's lousy, but I'm not despairing, that can often be kind of the prelude to joy, you know, in people's lives and their experience of us as well.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, the rubbish situations that you go through, it's hard to find joy.
Yeah.
But I think it's so important for us to be able to say, this is where my trust is, you know, and hardship is not the end of the story for me. And so I'm going to try to sit in that. Yeah. And I think to do that individually, I think we have to, you know, there's great power in speaking truth. You know, and to say, this is what I believe, even when we don't feel it, you know, to kind of go, this is what I believe. I believe this is not going to end this way, that there's more to this, that Jesus is going to renew this. And I don't know how that's going to look, and I don't know whether I'll see it. And it may not be the happy ending I want, but. And I think that then can plays out in the rest of our lives.
Yeah. Mm. Awesome. Jodes, how do you see this unfolding for us in life?
Exactly what Mark said, just that authenticity. I think so often we're tempted to go, how do I live a compelling life that I can share with others? It's like, no, you're putting like the cart before the horse. You need to have your own compelling why that you live out, and from the overflow of that, that's where we live and breathe and I guess experience that authenticity with God. I liken it to like the Instagram. Like, you always want to have life that's grammable, like doing it all for the gram.
Oh,
you
know,
you'll see a carload of people come in, jump out, take the photos, and then out of there. And it's like, you've just missed the beauty of this place to sit and enjoy and, you know, spend time in here without any photos, not judging Instagram photos. But you know what I mean? That just kind of just people coming in and taking the best of it and going, I lived this. And it's like, but did you?
Yeah.
Did you really experience that?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's that place of authenticity of really, I guess, living it wholeheartedly and whole bodily, like putting your whole self into that moment, whatever it is. And, you know, life is just generally suffering, which I find a little bit hilarious. You know, life is hard. And I think our society and culture avoid hard things and suffering. We prefer convenience, comfort, and ease and getting the Instagram moment without paying the price of admission any shape or form, or the buy now, pay later kind of attitude. Mm. So I think when you get, I guess, a grip on the reality of life and I guess the layout of the game, so to speak, you're a bit more relaxed with it and can then be present to enjoy and be authentic with it.
Yeah, awesome. Great stuff. Well, I think we'll wrap it up there. You've given us heaps to think about. Thank you guys so much for being on the Big Three today.
Thanks, Matt.
No worries. Before we wrap up the Big Three today, I just wanted to take a moment to address one of the questions that was raised on Slido over the weekend. It was the most upvoted question, and it was in regards to our response to racism and social injustice in our world. We as a team discussed whether or not we were going to unpack that question here on the Big Three today, and in the end decided not to, due to the fact that our senior pastor, Mark Rader, released a reflection upon racism from the perspective of the Christian belief late last week. We feel like what Mark shared in that space, although it doesn't answer the question completely, is a great starting point for anyone who's wanting to figure out how to address racism in our world and in our lives. So can I encourage you, if you were someone who wanted to see that question unpacked, to head to our YouTube channel and watch Mark's reflection. It doesn't answer it in its entirety, but like I said, it's a great first step in addressing racism in our world and in our lives. Now, if you want to be a part of the conversation, make sure that you log on to our online services this Sunday at gbconline.org.au and that you snap the Slido QR code before the sermon to get involved. Just a reminder for those of you who are listening to The Big Three today, we now film The Big Three and it goes to air on Wednesday nights at 7 p.m. at GBC Online. If you've enjoyed The Big Three today, be sure to give us a star rating and to subscribe so that you can stay up to date with all future episodes. Well, thanks for joining us for this week's Big Three and our deep dive into God's invitation for us all. Remember, there's no thought too small, no question too big.